turn it over. Take it away, Norm.
Good evening, everybody. I just set my little timer. I don't want to go over. I want to thank you, first of all, for inviting me here, Stephen. I am honored. I truly am. And a little nervous, so please bear with me. Anything that you hear me say tonight has come from the mouth of one of my teachers, whether it be a sponsor, whether it be a counselor, a spiritual advisor, or just you in the meeting. I take what you say, I make it my own, I take it into my heart, and then it becomes mine. So if you hear something you've said, you probably have, so I thank you for that. My name is Laura, and I'm gonna shut off my train. My name is Laura, and I am an alcoholic. I know that because when I place alcohol in my body, something changes in my brain. Something starts flashing. I start these crazy cravings, and I divert my focus to all the things that would normally be important in my life, to all the things that I always swore I would never do. I grew up in a family that of two alcoholics and one other addiction as well. And I always swore I would never be like that. I'm never going to be like that. I wouldn't do that. That righteous indignation that kept me going for years and years, looking at my brother, watching him go to jail, watching him get hurt. And my father, some of the things that we're doing, he's such a dignified man. And then when he drank, it just changed. And I swore I would never be like them. And then one day I was working, I used to live in Toronto for years, and I worked on the stock exchange, but I didn't actually, I wasn't a broker, I was a server. And in the bar or restaurant where I worked, they drank all the time. I was offered wine, and my boss would say, have a drink, have a drink. While I was working, smoking and drinking, good news or bad news, stocks plummeting, it didn't really matter. Everybody drank. That was the only reason for being, was drinking. And I was making a lot of money. And something happened to me when I drank. And one day, I couldn't find anyone to go drinking with. So you know what? I did it myself. And I sat there on my own. And I was just writing cards to my parents. But it didn't really matter because it had already started. Something had changed. And I knew it back then. I knew it. I can't say, well, I didn't know. It doesn't work like that. I already know because there was breadcrumbs for my brother when he went in. I knew the consequences. I knew what was happening. And I did it anyway. I chose to do it. So I'm going to back up a little bit. I quit drinking for the same reason as I started. And it was just relief. I just wanted relief from my thoughts because I didn't like who I was. I didn't appreciate anything that I did. I used to figure skate and I still didn't appreciate. And I was pretty good. I could listen to music and incorporate the feeling that I was feeling on ice. I didn't appreciate it because I always wanted to do something better, be better. So I drank. I wanted the relief. I wanted that feeling. As soon as I drank, I felt smart. I felt pretty. I felt attractive. I felt clever. I felt inhibited. It was just that feeling that nothing mattered to me. I certainly wasn't codependent. Didn't care about anyone else but myself. So I just kept going and kept going, and things started to happen. I spent some time in jail. My teeth were moving. My hair was falling out. I hit a pole on a moped. I had moved to Bermuda because I thought if I moved to Bermuda, then it'll be fine. I'll quit drinking. And then I showed up. And Bermuda was described to me as 67,000 alcoholics clinging to a rock. And I thought, Ed, one, this is perfect. I love this place. Every Sunday, it's a party. It was a party for Ed, and I just kept going around and around and around. And I was the only Canadian living there, not paying any taxes, making American money, not paying rent or food, who was in debt. And sadder things started to happen. I stopped laughing, and I started getting really sick. And that just happened. I started hating myself, and I started lying. I didn't like who I had become. I had already lost a marriage. I was completely undateable. I couldn't be with anybody. And then I met my true love, and I had an abusive relationship for 16 years, every single day. Emotionally, mentally, physically, I was beaten up. And in 2005, I was coming to the end of my drinking career, and every night I was rocking in my bed going, please, somebody help me, God help me. There was no atheist. I was not an atheist. I was really sad, and I was really sick. And I still took the abuse. Until I was the only girl that I knew, women would understand this, that could put on mascara and I could, without looking at myself in the eyes. That takes skill. But the weird thing was, is the day I realized that my abuser was me. I did it to myself. I said all those awful words. I drank the booze. I drove drunk. I did things that I promised I would never, ever do. I didn't want to hurt anybody. I said awful things. I broke people's hearts. If I didn't date men, I had victims. I was really a nasty piece of work. And I thought, how am I ever going to get over this? I can't stop this. I can't take this back. The one thing I remember when I was a little, quite young, in church, it was a children's focus, and the pastor made the kids pour sand in their hands. And he says, I want you to dump all the sand in the carpet. And he watched his kids, they were looking around at their parents. He goes, it's okay. Dump the sand in the carpet. And the kids dumped the sand in the carpet. And he says, okay, I want you to get it all back. He saw these kids and they were actually trying. They were so cute. He goes, get all the salt. Can you get the salt back? Get the salt back. This one girl goes, I can't get it all back. He goes, yeah, words are like salt in the carpet. You can't get them all back. Once they're out there, they're in the carpet for good. You can vacuum it. You can do whatever you want. You cannot get those words back. And I went, that's it. That was an aha moment at my children's birthday focus at my church. I had gotten to the point now that I thought, you know what? This is going to be the end of me. I'm going to die. I'm going to die like this. And then something hit me and I just went, I turned it around. I went, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. It was that was the biggest turning point. That was an improvement. That was where I was. That was my starting point. I don't want to die. And so the next day I was working in a job under the table in Bermuda because I had no money, and I was waking up, and as I was walking down to find out my bike, I was so hungover. I reeked of gin. I drank so much, and I couldn't remember dropping the money in the safe that night, and I kept having these sensations of like an adrenaline shot, just without anything happening, and I thought, I'm going to die today. This is it. If I drink today, I knew I was going to die, and so I finished my job and I sat on the street corner and I thought, what am I going to do? I thought, I'm going to go to the hospital. I thought, I can't go to the hospital. I can't really go to the hospital and say, you know what? I drank a lot of booze last night and I don't feel well. I couldn't do that. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll go see a priest. And I thought, well, I'm not Catholic. What am I going to do? And then I remembered the breadcrumbs. My brother had gone to AA. He had left me breadcrumbs. Two people had left me breadcrumbs, actually, but my brother went to AA. Oh my God, it was the early 80s. I was quite young. And something happened. There was some sort of psychic change. I don't know what you people did at that time. I didn't know what was going on, but I got my brother back. He was nice. He was clean. He wasn't getting in any trouble. He was showing us that he loved us. Our home was peaceful. Everybody was happy. And it was just like a new and improved, you know, Tony 2.0. Oh, it was so lovely. I was so happy. And I loved him so much. I always looked up to him because he had an eidetic memory. He was the Sheldon of the 70s from Big Bang Theory. He was so smart. And he had left me breadcrumbs to get into the program. Unfortunately, my brother thought that it was a religious program of action. And so he went back out. He said the gob was too much and he went back out and never got back into the program. But he had left me those breadcrumbs. And the other ones were from a lady. This is really weird. This is my first miracle. That going to my first meeting wasn't actually my first meeting. I had gone to one a year before I started drinking. Talk about a God moment. I was studying at the Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York, and I was the only Canadian that got in. It was like a big woo-hoo. But there was another Canadian girl from Toronto that was going and studying with Uta Hagen. But she was in my dorm. And she knocked on my door, and I know I'm going to cry again because I never forget her face. It reminded me of a cat that was really frightened or hears a loud noise, and the eyes instantly go back. And someone banged on my door, and I honestly got at this time, I did not know who it was. And I opened the door, and she just came into my room. She goes, "You've got to help me. I'm going to drink. I'm an alcoholic. If I don't make it to a meeting, I'm having a panic attack, and I'm going to die if I don't. If I drink, I'm going to die. You have to help me." I'm like, I was so young. I'm just like, what do you want me to do? She goes, "I got to go to the meeting. And I can't get in the elevator. And I'm really scared." I said, "It's okay. I'll come with you. We walked out. Good thing I had my keys and I think I had some money. And I held her hand going down the stairs, and she was holding on so tight. I could feel her nails digging in my flesh, and she was shaking. She was so... I grabbed her arm and walked down the street. I have no idea in New York where this meeting was, and I had no idea what to expect. And we went in, and the lady that was sharing, it was unreal. She had, the night before, she had gotten so drunk, and she called her answering machine. And in the morning, she checked her answering machine, and it was her voice. She had called her own answering machine, but she didn't sound drunk. And what was on her answering machine was, "You are going to die if you don't stop." And I'd never experienced anything like that. I couldn't believe it. I was spooked out. And not for a moment did I believe that that girl was lying. And another thing was that I'd never heard men talk so open and honestly without lying, without that false bravado. I'd never experienced that because I had alcoholics in my family, but that was really foreign to me. But that happened a year before I quit drinking. So my higher power goes, "Okay, I got an idea. And this is what happened to me." And I don't know anyone else that I've ever talked to that had that experience. I went to my first meeting a year before I picked up. So here I am in Toronto, and I called AA. I called the hotline, and I said, "Please help me. I can't stop drinking. I feel so sick, and I'm really scared I'm going to die." He said, do you need a ride? I needed a ride, but I wouldn't say that. I said, "No, I can get there to the bus. Where am I going?" And he gave me a church. And I said, I'm done work early. I'll go to the hotel first, and then I'll come back. Big mistake. Because as soon as I got on the bus, in came my dark passenger going, "It's okay. It's not that bad. Really? AA? Really? You're going to go to AA now. Just calm down. You're fine." This is what was going on in my head. And fortunately, I had the inspiration to open my laptop and to check and see if there was something written. And there was a quiz. It was an AA quiz. And I took it and I got an A+. For some reason, I was proud of that. And I got back on the bus and I went to my first meeting. And I opened the door and I sat right next to the door because just in case I people were weird and I needed to make an escape. And I heard, first of all, I saw that there was no women. It was just me. And I thought, oh my God, I'm the only alcoholic on this island. And then I heard, rarely have we seen a person fail. We thoroughly followed our path. And I thought, oh, I got this. And they got to the part that said constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself. And then I knew I was in trouble. And I basically cried for the rest of the meeting going, such a liar. I couldn't stop crying. I was so upset. But no matter how bad I felt or how sad I was, how puffy my eyes were, I felt better than when I came in. And they said, normally we give you a number and you would call other women. I said, okay. They said, but there was no one here today. So we want you to go to a woman's meeting. If you need to call someone, I'll have someone call you. I said, that's fine. I'll just go to the woman's meeting. And they said, don't drink. I said, okay. And they said, why don't you have something sweet? And so I thought, okay. And I was still so hungover. I went to the grocery store and I didn't even look at the booze aisle. And I got cereal and ice cream and I went home. And then a cab driver stopped me and said, I know you. You live at the hotel. Let me give you a ride. It's raining. Never happened before. But anyway, the next day I woke up and it went, I didn't drink yesterday. I didn't drink. I was just dancing in my room. I didn't drink last night. I kept a promise to myself. And so all of a sudden I went from, I can't believe I did it again. I hate myself. I hate my life. I'm such a loser. And feeling shame and pain. I felt ecstasy just from not drinking. I kept a promise to myself. I'd gone to the meeting. I didn't drink. I had my sweets. I didn't care if it was sugar. And then I had made plan to go to another meeting in one day. And that meant the world to me. And I went to the ladies' meeting and there was Pat. So this lady with the bouffant hairdo, there was a cake on the table, a card. She's knitting away and she says, hi there, are you a friend of Bill's? And I go, yes. And I said, what an odd thing. Why would you say that? I didn't even know who Bill was. And so these people sat down. For some reason, I felt like people were looking at me. And they said, are you new to the program? I said, no. And I said, this is my first meeting here. And they said, oh, you're not new to AA. I said, no. I went to a meeting yesterday. And they just kind of looked at me and smiled. And they said, do you want to sign the card? It's Norma's 20th birthday. And I went, I don't really know Norma. Maybe next year. And I thought, that's an odd thing to say. You're going to be around next year. Okay. And so Norma comes in. It's her 20th birthday. I'm looking at Norma and Norma's like 75. And I look at the lady next to me because I'm confused. I had no idea what was going on. And I said, I'm confused. Is that Norma? And they said, yeah. And I said, she's not 20. And they said, no. It's her birthday. It's her AA birthday. I said, I don't know what that means. I said, she's 20. She hasn't drank in 20 years. And I just went in a row. I couldn't believe it. 20 years of not drinking. To me, it was like a room full of $1, a million $1 bills. I know it exists. I just have no idea what it looks like. And this is what a 20-year-old Norma looked like. Little did I know that I'd be celebrating my birthday year after year with this beautiful goddess. I love Norma. But I kept thinking, like, what a weird name to name a 20-year-old. Norma, that's strange. Well, I just kept coming back and I just... You know, I kept waking up on day three, day four, and I couldn't do 90 and 90 because in Bermuda, they didn't have 90 meetings in 90 days for me. And I was still working and I had booze in my hand. And, you know, it was a little hard because I used to drink whatever. People bought nice bottles of wine and they wouldn't drink it. Like, what's wrong with these people? Like, really? Really? So I would taste it for wine knowledge. Wow, ridiculous. I couldn't believe I believed in all those lies. But something happened in my life. And I was taught a few things from my teacher. And I said, what starts it all off for me? She goes, you have a trigger. Then you have a thought. Then you get a feeling. Then you take an action. And then you have the consequence. She goes, and if you're like me, What will happen is sometimes your consequences are enough to be your next day's triggers. I said, that's it. That's exactly what happens. And, you know, I have these things in my head. She goes, honey, just because you have a thought doesn't make it true. And I thought, oh, that's brilliant, because that's how I felt. I don't do that today. I really don't do that. Sometimes I have a hot thought in my head, like, thank you, mind. Thank you for that thought, because that's not true. And then I back it up with what is true. What is true? Because my mind will throw the kitchen sink at me sometimes. Oh, you're fine. It's been years. You're good. No, no, I'm not. So here I go. I've got my breadcrumbs. I've got my meetings. I'm gone. I'm doing it. I don't have my license now because, yeah, jail was another one of the perks of not coming into the program a little bit sooner. But I went to another meeting at the Red Cross Center, and it was really, that was the first time I heard the promises. Oh my God, when I heard the promises, it truly is to me the most beautiful words ever spoken from a human tongue. Really, I couldn't believe what I was hearing, because what happened before I heard the promises, I was sitting in a meeting, I had 12 days and I thought, so what's in it for me? I didn't say that to people, but that's what I was thinking. What's in it for me? I mean, I might not go to jail anymore because I'm not drinking, but how am I supposed to have fun? I mean, I don't go anywhere. I can't hang out with my friends anymore. You know, my life is now AA. How am I supposed to have fun? And what does my life look like? And I was just putting it out there, and blam, I heard the promises. And I thought, that's it. I'm in. That was it. That was my jackpot. I was all in. After I heard that, that's exactly what I wanted. Just those words. I mean, and it wasn't stuff. I mean, fear of financial insecurity will leave us, but it wasn't the stuff that I wanted. It's the feeling. And that's what I'm getting to. Everything. If I don't feel it, I had numbed my feelings, so I couldn't feel anything. But it's the feeling that puts everything in motion. And now what happened, I'm at this meeting, I'm fully committed. In my brain, I'm just like, I'm ready. There's nothing you can tell me to do that I will not do. If I want what's on page 83 and 84. I want that. That is my goal. And so at that meeting, I'm fully committed. I'm feeling really great. And in Bermuda, what happened in the kitchen, when you want to go for a drink, all my English, Irish, and Scottish friends would go, bevy, bevy. And that would mean that you were going out for a bevy. Or 12, or whatever it was until you passed out. And so up comes a lady to me, and she says, do you have a sponsor? And I couldn't even speak. I just went, she said, would you like one? And I said, she goes, fine, my name is Bevy. And I said, what? She goes, my name's Bevy. And I said, you're kidding. I said, your name's what? She goes, Bevy. I said, okay. And now I'm thinking my higher power has really got a sense of humor, because come on, she didn't, we've got a man, this beautiful man named Tim from Scotland in my meeting, and just listening to him, and he said, what is your name? And she said, Bevy. She goes, I know, I've got the story from Laura, but that was it. That was my sponsor. She was named Bevy. She goes, you just got to listen to me for what not to do. And I'm like, all right, this is like, talk about coordinated incidences, because I don't believe in coincidences. I really don't. And so here I have Bevy, and then Bevy's saying to me, so how do you want to feel? And I said, she says, how do you want to feel? I said, I don't understand. She goes, honey, it's not a trick question. How do you want to feel? I said, well, good. She goes, good's great. She goes, well, great's great. You can feel great. You can feel joyful. You have a choice now. And that to me was just some of these things she kept saying. I kept going to meetings and hearing these things and writing them down. And I thought, oh, that's mine. I'm stealing that. I heard such beautiful things, but that was amazing. What freedom. Just by not drinking, I get to choose the way I want to feel. By my thoughts and actions, the same way as I did the junk and drank my face off, I could sit there and think different thoughts, thoughts of appreciation, thoughts of gratitude. How I, some days I sit in meetings, don't tell my friends from Attitude Adjustment on here. I'll go on and talk about, I'll look at Stan and go, oh, Stan, I love you so much because of this and this. And I'll sit there and appreciate every picture. I'm still listening and I just smile when there's a lull, and I'll sit there and do just rampages of appreciation for all the people that keep me sober. Seriously, I love them all. I say it all the time, but that's why. That's the secret. I just keep writing it down, how much I love them and how I love spending time with them every single morning. Seriously, this is eHarmony. This is what it, this is where it's at. And these people in my meeting that I go to now, I mean, I fell in love with them. I never got to meet them for a year and a half until just, it was back in September. I went to meet them. It was like Disney meets heaven. I got to touch them and look at them, and it was unreal, and see all these people, and they kept showing up, and it just, it warmed my heart so much. It was one of the nicest things that ever happened in my entire life, was meeting these people on Zoom. Really, didn't see that one coming. The rest of the planet was going one day at a time. I just got to take one day at a time. But we, the chosen ones who actually know a little bit about this. See, I lived in the past or the future. We are the only animals in the whole of the animal kingdom that has the potential to do that. My dog will come in during the meeting and he's wagging his tail. He's looking at me like, God, you're so beautiful. And he's never told me I need to comb my hair or brush my teeth because he loves my love. He sees the God within me. He sees my higher power. He sees my love. He doesn't see me at all, really. That's what he sees. And he vibrates at that level. That's why he's wagging his tail, because he's matching how I feel about him. But I can say to him, hey, do you want to go to the beach? Yay! And he starts bouncing around. If I say, okay, we're going to go tomorrow, he doesn't get tomorrow, because there is no tomorrow for him. There's only right now and this moment, this moment, this moment. And I learned how to live in the moment in AA. Because living in the past, or living too far in the future, or living in the future so much as I'm condemning it by going, oh my God, over things I would drink over. I think about something, then I worry about it, and then it's bango, end of days, all or nothing, flat on. Oh my God, I don't do that anymore. And you taught me that. You taught me that. You taught me about love. You taught me about being kind to other people. You taught me how to listen. You taught me that there's kind of two emotions. One is love and one is fear. Now I can have fun with it. My husband will come in and start talking about the business. And I'm like, I haven't slept. I need to go to the bathroom. I haven't eaten anything. I haven't had any coffee. I got a bit of a headache. I'm thirsty. And I didn't sleep last night. Do you really want to know what I feel? It's like, I'm good. And then he'll put a cup of coffee on my floor and push it in with a broom and say, why don't we go to a meeting today? He didn't say that anymore, because that's what I do. That's what I do. So right away with Bevy, I started working the steps. So here we were. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. And I got that. It was so easy to admit that. I accepted it full on. Except my life wasn't unmanageable. It was unbearable. I just couldn't take it. So the first step was not a hard step for me to take. I had no problems admitting that. It's funny. As soon as I went, I give up, everything got changed. Everything changed up. It was the best thing that ever happened to me, giving up. And so really, I get surrender. And then two, came to believe in a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, restore me to sanity. I did not know what that looked like, because I don't think I was that same even before I picked up a drink, to be honest with you. And you can laugh at that, but that's pretty much the truth. My thinking was very distorted. In fact, if someone would have given me a big book and taught me how to read from it, that might have been a good thing. But that didn't happen to me. And coming to believe, that's a powerful step. I just had to come to believe. I just had to change my perspective. Just had to come to believe. And lucky for me, this book, The Secret, had come out. And people were coming to believe in all sorts of powers greater than themselves at that time. So I had something to look at. I had a frame of reference. It was everywhere. People were coming, law of attraction and this, and coming to believe in all sorts of stuff. I'm like, okay, you know, they can do it. I'm sure I can do this. And then three, what I did to turn my will into care of God as I understood him. I didn't want to feel fearful. So I thought I'd step out and find a God of my understanding. And I did. I thought, for now, I'm going to lay down. And I laid down and looked up at the stars. I was in Bermuda where there's no big buildings. And I went, oh, I had never seen that because I'd always been drinking. It was like something you see, not even on a movie. It was so beautiful. I couldn't believe it in that moment. I'll never forget. And I could feel the warm tears coming down my face. I cry a lot, but I could feel it. And I thought, I was moved. And I thought, that's going to be my higher power. And that was good. And then by the time it came to making a fearless, searching moral inventory, I knew I needed something more. And I told my sponsor that. I said, well, what if it's cloudy out? What if I get, it's not something I can see. You know, I wanted something I could touch and taste, but to believe in the unseen, I had to feel it. So I said to my sponsor, I said, you know what? I hope you're not going to judge me, but I'm going to upgrade my God. And she said, well, okay. I had an upgrade. I had God 2.0. I needed to have my belief and my faith changed because I didn't want something outside of me. Not that the universe is not beautiful and touching and moving, but I didn't want, I always believed that God was always out to lunch when I called. And I always got voicemail and he never called me back. And this was my belief. So I wanted a God that I could feel inside me. Always was. Always will be moving in and out of things, can never be destroyed, just only changing form. So whether you call it God or I call it non-physical source energy, does it matter? Not to anyone in AA. Just believe in a higher power. It's all you told me to do. So my God 2.0 carried me through to the fourth step, because a couple of times in the fourth, I got pretty scared. I didn't want to face that. But then I kept plowing forward, because if I just kept moving forward, hopefully all the reasons I drank over would be diminished or set aside until my past could turn to wisdom. So in the meantime, there was this buffer of time where I had to just sit with it. And that's just it. We go to AA meetings and there's not distractions. Think about, people love their distractions. I love my distractions. Television, Facebook, and there's so many. But to sit with how you feel, even if it is bad, to sit there, and it was something for me. I used to go down to the water and just watch a ship go by and put my sadness on the ship and just watch it as it just passed me in the distance. And for some reason, I felt better. I tried every single process that I could to make myself feel better. And just going, this too shall pass. This too shall pass. I didn't like hearing that in the beginning. I didn't like that. I also didn't like living life on life's terms. It made it sound like I had to take away my choice. But appreciating the things later, as I'm going through the steps, I started seeing things going, that's why. That's what that means. Oh my God, I get it. And even last year, I go all the way to Sedona because I, you know, practice the 11th step on the Red Bell Rocks. And I went into the chapel. I bought this beautiful sign. It says, be still and know that I am God. Isn't that beautiful? Until last year, I went, oh my gosh, that's like God saying, be still and know that I am God, because God has to tell you he's God. Be still and know that I am God. The God within me is reaching, or hopefully talking to the God within you. It's not God saying, hey, me, God, that's it. And I just, what an aha moment. I thought, that's been around the world with me. And I just got it then, really? But I have to remain teachable. Doesn't mean I'm stupid. It's just, it comes up at the moment. And it's just like AA program. Every day I go to a meeting, I'm like, wow, that was brilliant. And some of these people that are teaching me this are the people that have 12 and 3 days. I've learned in the program that I can go all the way to California in the dark with the headlights. And it will be, my path will be lit up for me. I also learned that I don't have to seek out the path. The path found me. The path found me. And speaking of that, sometimes if I don't know what I'm doing, I just, it's just the my AA program, my higher power, this is how it goes. Please proceed to the highlighted route. It's just like a GPS. Please proceed. And every now and then I get recalculating because if I'm not perfect and I mess up. And I mess up a lot sometimes. I do some real singers. And it's not like an Etch-a-Sketch that I can turn over and shake and then I got a clean slate. Look at that. Brand new. All good. No, sometimes, you know, for the amount of times my foot has been in my mouth, I should have chocolate toes, really. But that's okay, because I just keep going through each day. And every day I wake up, I imagine that there is a stocking. I love Christmas, but I do love stockings because I'm a kid. There is a stocking on my wall of little surprises and delights. And it might not be in the form that you think. And I open it every day and think, wow, that's cool. I wonder what that's going to bring. I wonder what that's going to lead to, because I don't, now you taught me I don't have to react to something and go, oh great, this is just perfect. I don't have to do that. I have to look beyond that, because there might be something, there's something in that for me, there's a nugget in there for me. And sometimes people say, you don't react to anything. But sure I do. There's sometimes I'm screaming inside like that duck with it, they're paddling underneath, they're all calm on the water, their feet are going like a devil. But what I do is I keep coming back. I keep hearing the things that I need to hear. And you know what? Today, I feel better now than I think I ever have in my life. I really do. And if I mess up or I don't feel comfortable, I can apologize. If something is really bad, I mean, I've got a sponsor in Bermuda, and I've also got to go to an emergency person. She's now in South Carolina, but she used to be here in Maine. And if I need something, she calls me within the hour. And I call her on every birthday and say, thank you. Because she saved my life one day. One day, I had some very scary tests to do. And, you know, of course, the end of days came and, you know, MRIs and all this stuff. And they were going to give me Valium right away. Oh, Valium. Ooh. And then I started to cry and I called her. I said, they want to give me Valium. She goes, does the Laura inside you, does your ego want a day off from recovery or do you really need it? I said, my ego wanted a day off. She goes, I'm so glad you called me. She goes, what else can I help you with? I said, no, I'm all good. And I went to a meeting and I felt a lot better. But that's what I was thinking, because that's what my brain would go to. It still goes to the oddest places. It still goes to the oddest places, but I can make an amends to someone, and I do to my husband. My poor husband, I'll be sitting in the car and I'll go, do over. Because some days my day, I just need to do it over. It's like such a mess, and I don't want to carry on with that feeling, especially if I'm angry about this or I'm sorted about that, or you did this to me, or they cut me off and I get upset after all the miracles that have happened in my life. Really? Really? I'm going to focus on that? And every now and then I'll just go, there's nothing for me there. There's nothing for me there. I have a man that drives by me on the street and he gets mad when I walk, and I do walk on the road, but I have one foot on the white line. And it's funny, in Maine, they need 6 feet. Oh, there's no Mainers on here, but I have my foot on the line and the rest is going down a little bit. And I just need to walk this way and then so I can walk to work. And this man pulls over to scream at me, get off the road. And it's like, and I said, you know what? And I thought, oh, here's some, I could feel it welling up the first time it did that. And I thought, no, I don't know what happened to him. I don't know if his wife died. I don't know if his dog died. I don't know if he's just a grumpy old man, but really, am I going to let him ruin my serenity? So I'm saying, well, we can share the road, Harold. It's like, my name's not Harold. I said, you know what? I love you, Harold. I love you, Harold. And sometimes he gets so mad, and the next, you know, next Saturday, he'll come down. Get off the road. Harold, how are you? I missed you, because I don't want to carry that misery with me in the day. I don't know where he's coming from. I love you, Harold, because I want to practice that. I want to love Harold, not because he's lovable, but because I want to be the person that loves. And some people will ask me sometimes, aren't you afraid you're a doormat? The more I open my heart, I tell you, I get it all back. It's like when you give a gift at Christmas, it's really for me. If I do something or make someone or bake something for somebody, I mean, the joy is mine watching them enjoy it themselves. So I get to practice with people like Harold. And God willing, you know what? I hope he's okay. And I really do. And I said to him the last time I saw him, I said, you know what? I know you like me. You would not stop to yell at me if you did not like me, Harold. I think you're worried about my safety. I think you really like me, Harold, and I love you. And I don't see Harold anymore. I hope he's okay. But it's just a different way that you taught me of reacting or not reacting. Because if I react and I start screaming and get riled up, was where I used to lead up to a drink and blame you for it, because you did this to me, you said this, you cut me off, you did all these nasty things. It's never the big things that made me drink. It's the little tiny things. Some little tiny things. There are no small upsets. Right. Yeah. Of course, in miracles. I've never upset for the reason I think. And sometimes it's amazing that I can lie about it and believe it. I'm like George Costanza. It's not a lie if you believe it. And I believe some of this stuff. It's just incredible. I'll believe the lie under the lie. And I'll say, well, I'm concerned about people. And it's not. It's not. And when I pick apart it and I pick the untruth about, then I can go and apologize. And then hopefully, you know, when that keeps coming up, I keep doing it until finally I get it, until I train my brain that need to be kind and loving heart. If I want to feel joyful, which is what I said I wanted to be, the promise is that's what I want, the high end. As my friend says, the top shelf. I want the top shelf. I want to feel it all. I want to see the miracle. I want to live the best that life has got to be. And you offered that to me. And all I had to do was the steps, read 164 pages, get a sponsor. Really? What a gift that was. I was on my deathbed. And now I have a life that sometimes people ask me, they said, are you always this happy? And I was like, no. Sometimes I'm much happier. And either they join me or they walk away, because I see the most beautiful things. You know, I had my headphones on. I didn't have my camera on. And listen to the joy in your voices over your pets. Your cats, your dogs. Look at my dog. Look at, and it was a one-upmanship of love and appreciation. And that's what we're taught here, to love and appreciate one another. And we help each other. It's such a perfect program. I come in. They gave me the steps. Everyone went to step one. I thought that was a miracle. After 30 days, my friend Reggie puts his arm around me and says, it's your turn. You need to go talk to that new girl. I said, what have I got to say to her? He goes, a lot more on how you stayed sober in 30 days than I did in 15 years. Who do you think she's going to listen to, you and me? And I went, oh, okay. Then I go over and talk, whoever I've sponsored. Sometimes if my sponsor feels bad, I tell her, like, really, you feel bad? How many lives do you think you've saved? There's just me. I'm the only sponsor that I know. How many sponsors have you had? How much time have you given? How much sobriety have you gotten just from it? Oh, it's such a beautiful thing. It is the most beautiful thing on the planet. And we are privy. We come in through our despair and pain and horrific circumstances. And we guide each other to joy. Please proceed to the highlighted path. Oh, man. I can't thank you enough. I'm so honored to be here. They share what was it a desperate life to live at one point. And because I did, it all changed. One day I just changed my mind. And then I showed up, I became known, and you did the rest. And I'll never forget what you did for me. Thank you so much for letting me share.